For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Catherine Drew. An exit poll in South Korea strongly suggests that Liberal candidate Moon Jae-in will be the country's new president. There's concern in the US that his victory could lessen South Korean resolve to confront North Korea over its nuclear and missile programs. FSN's Kate Fisher reports from Washington.
The world's 11th largest economy, South Korea, is a staunch ally of the United States. For the last 8 years, Seoul and Washington have been in lockstep over North Korea, with sanctions and isolation. But Mr. Moon favors greater dialogue. The new US President Donald Trump has also unsettled South Koreans by accusing them of not paying enough for the presence of American troops stationed in the country and by threatening to kill a trade agreement with Seoul. Kate Fisher, Washington.
France's former socialist Prime Minister Manuel Valls says he'll join Emmanuel Macron's movement for the parliamentary elections next month. Macron doesn't have much time to celebrate his presidential win because he has to find nearly 600 candidates to fill parliamentary seats so he can build a coalition. But as FSN's Ollie Barrett reports from Paris, Valls joining the movement could actually politically hurt Macron.
It's an interesting dilemma for the Macron camp, because if too many high-profile socialists sign up as En Marche, République En Marche MPs, it allows his opponents, his critics, people like Marine Le Pen, to say that he is this continuity candidate. He's essentially a socialist in disguise. At the same time, he does want to create that broad church to include all sections of French society and French political support. And crucially, he needs to try and get some kind of parliamentary majority if he's to have any chance of governing meaningfully at all.
In a case seen as a test of Indonesia's religious tolerance, the former governor of Jakarta, Basuki Tahaja Purnama, who is an ethnic Chinese Christian, has been found guilty of insulting Islam and sentenced to 2 years in jail. The former governor, who is also known as Ahok, received a sentence which is harsher than many had expected after being found guilty of referring to a verse from the Quran in a campaign speech last year. German authorities have arrested a third person as part of an investigation into a far-right extremist plot that included members of the country's armed forces. The plotters are accused of planning an attack with the intention of blaming it on refugees. FSN's correspondent Iris Spitzer has more from Berlin.
German authorities arrested a 27-year-old soldier as a possible accomplice to a plot targeting public figures deemed sympathetic to foreigners. He is accused of working with a fellow soldier and at least one other accomplice to plan the attack and make it look like it was carried out by an asylum seeker. The incident has raised fears of right-wing extremism within the country's military. Ira Spitzer, Berlin.
From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Catherine, and a warm welcome to you. Warm is the operative word today. Glorious day again. Spring day in Manchester. As the time approaches 3 minutes past the hour. My name is Richie Allen. You can tweet me right now at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Well, the best laid plans of mice and men. I had a couple of great guests lined up for you this Tuesday, but circumstances have put paid to that, so we've got to revert to plan B. Tell you more about that in a second. Thanks for tuning into the programme, though. Great to have your company. We'll make it a good one, you and I. Let's do it, then.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show. Brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Indeed it is. Now, in about 15 minutes' time, I'm going to open the phone line to the programme and the Skype to the programme. And I look forward to hearing from you on any subject you deem important. It could be the forthcoming UK election. It could be anything else. The Skype handle for the programme is Chat with Richie, simple as that, Chat with Richie, and the phone number is, if you're calling inside the UK, 0161 408 2017, that is 0161 408 2017, If you're calling from outside the UK, it's +44 161 408 2017. +44 161 408 2017. Or Skype chat with Richie. And I'll be taking your calls about 15 minutes from now. And we'll do that this particular Tuesday. What is it today? The 9th of May 2017. Good evening. Yeah, strange old day today. Ralph Epperson was due to be on the programme today. But old Ralph has gone AWOL. I think something has come up there. So he's not going to make it. And I was going to be talking about Pedogate and global paedophile rings. And the guest I had lined up for that, gone missing as well. So it's just been one of those days. It happened late on this afternoon. And I don't drag any old guest out of the basement for you. I wouldn't do that to you. So I decided, there's plenty of things that have come up on the programme in the last few weeks, that, including on yesterday's programme, that you and I can talk about. And I'm just going to talk about one or two of those things now for the next few minutes. And then I look forward to hearing from you. I'm going to give you the number again. If you're calling from inside the UK, it is 01614082017. 01614082017. Outside the UK, +44 161 408 2017. +44 161 408 2017. But you don't need to spend any money, because if you've got Skype, you can Skype chat with Richie. That's all one word. Chat with, R-I-C-H-I-E, chat with Richie. And you can talk about anything, as I said, that's relevant to the subjects that I get into with my guests on this programme. We're broadcasting live today, as usual, on davidicke.com. Check out davidicke.com/headlines. Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. And TuneIn Radio, AlternateCurrentRadio.com, another great platform, ACR. And we are on TuneIn, which is, I believe it's an app that millions and millions and millions of people use now. We're on there. And I think nearly 75% of our live audience listens through the TuneIn app. That's all over the world, that is. Wonderful stuff there. So Jeremy Corbyn was in Manchester today. I think he might still be in Manchester, various places in the city, various suburbs of the city, as the Labour Party launched their campaign but didn't launch the manifesto. Not going to dwell on this at all. I'm not going to do that. I get the feeling there's election fatigue. There was a very interesting exchange, though, between Jeremy Corbyn and the BBC political correspondent Laura Koonsberg. She asked Corbyn 7 times in Manchester today on whether the UK would definitely leave the European Union if he was to become Prime Minister. And you probably won't be surprised, he wouldn't answer the question. He wouldn't answer it. He mumbled, he stuttered, he obfuscated, but he wouldn't commit and say, yes, because of last year's referendum, if I become Prime Minister, if my party is elected, whatever happens in the negotiations, yes, the UK will leave the European Union. Corbyn wouldn't say that. Now, bbc.co.uk/news is where you'll find that particular clip if you want to amuse yourself a bit later on as well. Found it quite funny yesterday, coming off the air yesterday, to see the White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, a very unusual looking man. Now, I'm no oil painting myself. Women don't swoon in lust as I walk down the street, so I'm not going to throw any stones at that glass house. But a weird-looking man, Spicer. He was pressed by members of the press yesterday about the promises made by Donald Trump to block Muslims from certain countries coming into the United States. He mumbled, he stuttered. And a short time later, any reference to Muslims coming or being banned from the United States was removed from the website. So there you are. And again, I wonder, And I'm not going to mention anyone in particular or anyone's show or anyone journalist. I won't mention or have a go at anybody today. Today's a good day. I'm not going to have a go at anybody. But all of those people who supported Donald based on these promises to halt unfettered immigration immediately, clean up the swamp, prosecute Hillary, stop intervention policies, stay away from destroying countries in the Middle East and all of that. I wonder what stone have they crawled under now, all of those people who swore by Donald Trump before the election. That caught my eye yesterday and that amused me. Taking your calls, remember, just going to remind you again, 0161 408 2017 if you're calling from inside the UK. If you're not and it's outside the UK, plus 44 161 408 2017, and you can also you don't have to have a phone, you can Skype chat with Richie. We'll do that in about 10-15 minutes time. I sense you have a lot to say. Couple of stories today then, good news as opposed to bad news. You might be aware by now the Dublin City Council, Ballyhaulclia, Irish capital, the Council of Dublin, has flown the Palestinian flag over City Hall in a gesture of solidarity with Palestine and with Palestinians, and will continue to do that until the end of the month. How did it come about? Well, the motion to show solidarity for the beleaguered and oppressed Palestinians was put before Dublin City Council by John Lyons, who's a councillor, People Before Profit councillor. He said the move would support communities living under apartheid, worse than South Africa. The motion was carried yesterday with the support of Sinn Féin and other left-wing parties by a majority of 42 to 11. How wonderful. Only 7 abstentions. Centre-right parties Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil opposed the motion there. The motion stated that the City Council will fly the flag as a gesture of our solidarity with the people of Palestine living under occupation in the West Bank and Gaza, with the Palestinian citizens of Israel denied basic democratic rights, and with the over 7 million displaced Palestinians denied the right of return to their homeland. So this is a wonderful thing, I think, a really, really wonderful thing. Been a little bit of opposition to it. The Israeli ambassador to Ireland is not happy. His name is Zev Boker. Zev Boker. Now I say his, it could be her. So I don't know much about the Israeli ambassador to Ireland. I should have looked it up. You cry. You lazy bastard, Richie. Why didn't you look it up? Because I spent most of the last part of the afternoon, to be honest with you, trying to sort out the programme with the abstentions. But anyway, the ambassador said that this is highly politically charged and some members of the Irish Jewish community are concerned by the negative message that the flying of the flag promotes. I wonder how many journalists asked the Israeli ambassador what could possibly be negative about showing solidarity with people who have been brutalised in an illegal occupation, confined to an open-air prison, denied basic human rights. What could possibly be negative about that? And these some members of the Irish Jewish community, who are they? Name them. Not so that we can troll them and harass them, but so that you can have some credibility. Because I know a lot of Jewish people in Ireland, by the way, and I know a lot of Jewish people over here, and they support the BDS movement. They support sanctions against Israel, believe you me. I wonder how many Jewish men and women, Irish Jews, actually contacted the embassy to express concern. I would say the number's probably not very much. That was a good old story today. I really liked that. Really happy with that. So I was. Today, no response from the Israeli government or from the Knesset just yet, but I'm sure in the next day or two we probably will hear about that. I put a picture on Facebook the other day. It got quite a few shares and got quite a bit of discussion. And it was about the oath of allegiance that MPs must take before taking their seat in Parliament. The oath of allegiance that MPs must take before taking their seat in Parliament. Now, what I was very, very surprised by was how few people in this country actually knew anything about that at all. I thought that would be pretty much common knowledge. I would have imagined that those of you who went to school in the UK, primary school, secondary school, would know that MPs must swear an oath to the monarch before taking his or her seat in Parliament. But incredibly, a lot of people didn't know about that. And I shared a screen grab of the Wikipedia page, the basic page, that talks about the oath. You must take the oath before taking your seat in Parliament. You must swear allegiance to the Crown, to the Queen. If you don't, you won't get paid. You won't be allowed to take your seat. You will not be allowed to speak in debates. And you will not be allowed to vote. And I made the point when posting that you thought the monarch's role was only ceremonial and that the MP was working for you. And I was staggered at the amount of people who contacted the programme to say, Richie, I had no idea. I really had no idea. I believed, Richie, that the Queen has more power or the Crown has more power than they're letting on, but I had no idea that if an MP didn't swear allegiance to the Queen, that they wouldn't be allowed to take their seat, they wouldn't get paid, and they couldn't obviously speak thereafter in debates. But that is a fact. What do you make of that? Put that in your pipe and smoke it, as they say. You might have a comment on that. You might not. I'd be interested to hear your opinions on that. The feminisations of men. The feminisation of men. This came up in the conversation with Stuart Swerdlow yesterday. And one or two of you sent me messages saying you were amused at the tone that part of the conversation took. A couple of wisecracks were made about men in skinny jeans and makeup and man bags. But it's a serious issue, isn't it? The feminisation of men, isn't it? The massive attention to gender identity politics over the last 18 months to 2 years, the focus on that by the media, by talk shows on TV and on radio. I think that's very important. These are subjects we're going to be covering a lot in the coming weeks and months as well. And I was listening to BBC Radio 5 Live earlier, and I do listen to that as well as BBC Radio 4 and a number of different talk radio stations throughout the day. And I noticed that the former England cricketer, Freddie Flintoff, who does a podcast about sport for the BBC, he presents it with Robbie Savage and somebody called the Ping Pong Guy. And I noticed that on this week's podcast, well, it was featured on BBC Radio 5 Live News today, Flintoff was again talking about mental health and depression and coping with depression. Now, I'm a cricket fan. I love cricket. And I was getting into cricket at a time when Freddie Flintoff was coming to the end of his career. I was getting into it in 2005, 2006. Those were the twilight years of his career. And later on, after he finished, he talked about battling depression. Now, what's very interesting is I sometimes mention to you on this programme that it's when you watch the news programmes very carefully, you see that some of these issues, they keep bringing them up on a fortnightly or monthly basis. And it's a constant thing. And it happens all of a sudden. And pretty much all the news programmes together will all start to cover this at the same time. Mental health. Talking about mental health. Destigmatising mental health. Getting men to talk about mental health. It all comes at the one time. Now, I looked over the BBC archives and it seems that every month for nearly a year now, Flintoff or somebody like him has talked about mental health, and then that conversation has been made into a news story that gets carried by the BBC and carried by other media, right? So what's going on? This agenda to get people talking about depression. We heard late last month from the Prince William and Prince Harry talking about mental health and mental illness. It's all the rage. And I was thinking about that in terms of, is this constant focus on mental health, is this more identity politics being served up and being foisted upon you and me and others? You know, not actually normalising depression, because I've got no problem with talking about, with urging men and women to share how they're feeling with one another, particularly in relationships. You know, not to bottle it up. If you've had a bad day, don't bottle it up. Don't let it end in a row or a vicious argument that might cause hurt or harm. I don't mean physical harm, but, you know, it might cause harm to your partner, might hurt them or upset them. I've no problem with that. You know, normalising, talking about bad feelings and speaking about them, I've no issue with that. But you know, I was thinking today, listening to this, they're almost trying to make it cool. Dare I say that? And I know there will be people listening to this programme who have suffered and are suffering with the way they feel, with their feelings, with their mental health. And I totally understand that because of the circumstances they're in. So I'm not trying to minimalise that at all. But are they trying to make suffering from depression almost aspirational? You know, encouraging people to identify as somebody with a disorder. You know, getting people to identify themselves within a category, within a disorder. Somebody who needs therapy and medication. Flintoff mentioned several times in this particular podcast that he takes medicine for his, for what he perceives as his mental illness. He takes medicine for it. And he makes this, he makes this analogy, and you hear it all the time. If you have a headache, you take an Anadin. You know, if you have a cut on your knee, you get a Band-Aid. If you've got insomnia, you take a sleeping tablet. So why wouldn't you take some medication to help your head? So they're encouraging people to aspire to being somebody with a disorder who needs therapy and medication. Now, I'm not the greatest when it comes to stuff like this, and I talk off the cuff. I don't write scripts. You don't write scripts for radio anyway. You make bullet points for radio. You don't write scripts. You write scripts scripts for television. So I sometimes struggle to find the vocabulary to explain what it is I'm trying to say. But are they programming children and teenagers to aspire to having a disorder and to identify with that? I wonder. Because you and I know there is an agenda to medicate the human condition, isn't there? And some of our listeners overseas might not have heard of Aaron or Aaron Lennon. He's a pretty good football player, soccer player, who currently plays for Everton Football Club. And Aaron went AWOL a few days ago. He was picked up and he was sectioned, which means he was detained for his own safety and he was sent for psychiatric evaluation. And he was undergoing, he was in a bit of a state. And he was in a bit of a stressful situation. And there's been a lot of talk about this. And today, there was a lot of talk across the media again about soccer players, professional soccer players, ringing helplines to talk about anxiety, particularly feelings of anxiety. And I was thinking to myself, listening to this, and I've had some bad times over the years. You know, when I say bad times, there's been times when things have been difficult. You know, we found ourselves in a very difficult situation in Spain in late 2012 and 2013 when we ran out of money and we're in a very, very bad situation financially. And we're under severe pressure because of that. And I was stressing, and typical, I suppose, of typical of Paddy Irishman, I wasn't saying too much about it. But then at the same time, I wasn't screaming at Caroline and ranting and raving either. But I was bottling it up, and we were going through that. But I knew why I was anxious, why I was stressed, and why I was coming out occasionally in a rash and getting, you know, breathless at times, because I was so worried about stuff. And I was thinking about these footballers ringing helplines for anxiety and being referred to a clinician who might then diagnose them with having a mental disorder. What the mother? If you were playing soccer or baseball or American football in front of 20 or 30,000 fans and you're expected to perform and your livelihood is dependent on you performing in front of people, in front of the television cameras, you'd kind of, you'd expect to be anxious about it, wouldn't you? You'd expect to be doubtful about yourself and your abilities. You would be expected to harbour feelings of nervousness and doubt, wouldn't you? And yet they're referring these people for psychiatric treatment. They're what are they doing? They're medicating the human condition, aren't they? And I know this isn't new. You've heard this before from David and from other researchers. But it's right in front of your eyes now. You know, this won't go away, this mental health agenda on our news programmes. I mean, Jesus, Aaron Lennon, if I was in Aaron's position, I would be stressed to be Jesus. I've worked in very, very, very high-end commercial radio and national radio for a time. I know about the stresses of having to prepare programmes and the stresses of every 6 months living or dying by the ratings of your programme. I understand that. I had many sleepless nights and many nights when I went to bed with a bottle. I don't mean, you know, serious drinking, but I don't mean going to bed with a bottle. I mean having a few drinks before going to bed because of stress. But the cause of that was the insanity of the job I was doing. I didn't need to I was going to say something silly there. I didn't need lithium or some of these drugs to zone me out to the condition that I was feeling that was just perfectly normal. And I want to say it again, you know, talking about Prince Harry and Prince William, they've labelled grief as a mental health issue. If somebody close dies in your household, your best friend maybe, you know, your wife, your husband, your dearest grandparent, you going to pieces is absolutely normal. And the wretched feelings of missing that person and wanting them to just open the door and come in and talk to you the way they always did. But this lunatic cabal wants to medicate this now. Go see somebody. Get medicated. You don't have to grieve. We've got something for you. And I couldn't get the clip today. Like I said, things were crazy this afternoon, trying to figure out what I was going to do on the programme in light of my nauseous. By the way, it's never happened to me in history, in 18 years of making and presenting programmes. It's never happened that two guests jumped out of a programme, ever. So that's a first. I suppose it was bound to happen eventually. And that's what's happened if you're just tuning in. I will be opening the phone line in a minute to take your calls. I'll give you the numbers again in a second. So this staggers me. This monthly news story with a different angle on it about mental health issues. So two things are happening here. The agenda to medicate every single human condition, or to identify as treatable every single human condition, and to give children the aspiration to identify with a group with a disorder of some description. And do you know what I was thinking today? And I laughed out loud because I have one or two eccentricities. I do talk to myself when I'm out and about with my dog, and I get away with it. I think people think I'm talking to the dog when I'm not. And I was saying to myself, the system is now presenting this. There's something wrong with you if you don't have a problem. Right? They're telling people you have a problem and there's something wrong with you if you don't. I mean, you couldn't make it up. Go see somebody, get medicated. Now, none of this is groundbreaking. Some great men and women have talked about this and the determination to medicate the human condition, but not like this. You know, not in terms of getting our children to aspire to a mental condition, to aspire to accepting, for social acceptance, that there's something wrong with you. Something wrong with you? Is there? Oh yeah, there is. There is. That's what I identify with. From now on, you will refer to me as this. I think it's quite amazing. I think it's quite amazing. Folks, tonight I'm going to give preference to people who've not phoned the programme before. I do this all the time because we have an enormous reach and an enormous audience, and I want that reflected in the calls. You can call 0161 408 2017 if you're calling from inside the UK. 0161 408 2017. If you're calling from outside the UK, plus 44 161 408 2017. That's plus 44 161 408 2017. But if you don't want to do that and you don't want to phone me, if you're worried about spending money on the call, and I totally understand that, you can Skype chat with Richie. Skype, if you're on Skype, look for chat with Richie, do that and you'll get connected to me straight away.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premilonpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
27 minutes at the top of the hour, just before we take our first call, and he or she is standing by patiently. Let me tell you about tomorrow. Richard Kahlberg joins the show tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss Richard. He joins me tomorrow. But before Richard, we've got Jürgen Schmidhuber. Jürgen Schmidhuber. Gesundheit, you said there straight back at me. Who's Jürgen Schmidhuber? Well, he's a very interesting man. And in Germany, he leads research into developing artificial intelligence. Incredible guy. He's going to be on the programme tomorrow. It's going to be an amazing conversation. Jürgen Schmidhuber on Wednesday's programme. Richard Kahlberg as well on The Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. It is exactly 25 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Let's go to the phones. Our first caller is live. Caller, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks, Richie. How are you?
I'm very well. Who am I speaking with?
It's Alex Doust. I have phoned before, so Alex, cut me off at any point.
I won't cut you off at any point. Nice to hear from you, my friend. The floor is yours. You can set the agenda. Well, go ahead, Alex.
Actually, I wanted to make a comment about what you were just talking about.
Brilliant, mate. Go ahead.
Mental health. Because it struck a chord with me because a few years ago, when I left college, I had an extended period where I was out of work, out of doing anything. And that sort of upset to my schedule led me to have a little bit of a breakdown because I'd never had anything like that before. It was about 6 months of doing nothing. That led to me having a breakdown. And I had sort of pretty severe depression. So I was obviously bounced around, you know, different GPs and given different prescription drugs and things. And I was bouncing around various doctors, various institutes for a while until I finally reached one doctor who didn't really believe in medication. He didn't believe in anything. And he was the one who just said to me that we're all sort of bipolar. We're all depressed. We all have, you know, days like that. And it's just something that you need to find your own way of dealing with. But medication for me was like not a good thing at all. It really sort of led to me going too far up or too far down. It's one of those things, you know, people, we all have our days where we're good and bad, but if we instantly start reaching for tablets when you go up or down, then you're going to be in a bad place because they have nasty side effects that sometimes we don't even know about.
That's really interesting, Alex. So the first doctor you spoke with and you said to him or her, listen, this is how I'm feeling. It's been about 6 months. Things aren't going well. And they moved to a prescription, did they, almost immediately?
Instantly. They gave me a 7-day course of an SSRI antidepressant.
Wow.
And told me to come back in a week and let them know how it was. I believe I was 18 or possibly 19 at the time.
You see, I know nothing about anything, and I'm not saying that for a laugh. I really don't. And I know I'll get a bit of criticism from people who say, Richie, you're being a bit flippant now about mental illness. And I'm not. I'm sure that, you know, people can be very, very, very severely down in themselves and depressed. But, you know, I remember having a period when I left uni when there wasn't very much going on, and the boredom and the pressure to get something was driving me to feeling terrible, feeling down, wanting to stay in bed, to be upset. You know, at times to be angry, really, really angry with things and the way things were going on, looking at how other people were getting on. Luckily enough, I never, I never went to see anybody about it. I just kind of, eventually something happened for me and I got out of it and things kind of went back to the way they were before. So you did take the medication, Alex, and it wasn't good.
I took it for about 2 years. Eventually they changed it to another medication, which I didn't notice any difference, to be honest, but the people around me started telling me that I'd become a very angry person and I'd snap at people over nothing, and I never really noticed it until I stopped taking it and I suddenly felt a lot calmer. But I did. I trusted the doctors. I took the medication every day for at least 2 years.
But yet you had the presence of mind to know that it wasn't right and to find somebody to talk to you who wouldn't say, right, here's a prescription, get some, lithium or Prozac down you. Why was that? Because you could feel the medication was wrong, right?
I didn't actually at the time.
No?
Some of my family were a bit worried about me because I used to say things to them like, I'd be quite happy taking these tablets for the rest of my life. It wasn't until I actually, you know, got out of it and realised that I didn't need that medication to make me feel better that I suddenly realised that it wasn't doing anything that I couldn't do myself if I had the strength of mind and the willpower to do it.
We're going to get a lot of comment on this, there's no doubt about that, because, and I expect people to ring up to say that they totally disagree with this and that it's not, you know, it's not for everybody to just shake themselves out of it and to get on with
absolutely.
Life.
I mean, there are some people who have it really severe. I mean, I've met some people who've got it absolutely severe, but for a lot of people, they can bring themselves out of it if they have the right mindset. But again, a lot of people don't have the right mindset, and a lot of people are looking for the easy way out. Because I used to think this to myself all the time when I was feeling really low. If somebody offers you a magic tablet and they tell you that it's going to make you feel better, of course you're going to take it. You'd be stupid not to. It's just that, you know, you don't think of the consequences because there isn't a magic tablet. It's
no.
It's a hit and miss treatment.
Do you know what, Alex? Even those with very severe forms of it, again, it might be argued, and again, I have to put my hands up and say, I've had no training, whether it's holistic medicine, homeopathic medicine, or conventional medicine. I don't know anything. But I guess the we always treat the symptoms, not the underlying cause. And people with very serious bouts of depression, there might very well be circumstances in their life that have led to that happening and to those feelings. And in that case, the circumstances are the underlying cause. So giving somebody medication to try and get them on some sort of even kind of level, to kind of zone them out of it, is not dealing with the underlying cause of whatever is making them feel like that.
No, absolutely.
That's all I can say.
Another problem with that is that if you're not dealing with the cause of the problem that's made you feel like that, then you become reliant on the medication, because if you then take the medication away, you go back down and you feel the same. My grandma has actually been on Prozac for 25 years. Like, she goes off it around about summertime every year. She'll stop taking it because the weather gets nicer and she perks up a little bit. And then as soon as we get to darker weather, she gets down and grim again. She starts giving away her things because she thinks she's going to die. And then all of a sudden, she's back on the Prozac.
Tell me this, Alex. Is she arthritic and, you know, with the cold? And, I mean, I know what it's like in the UK and in Ireland. Would that be, I mean, would she anticipate the winter as being hard because my hands and my knees and my joints are going to be sore and it's going to be dull and dark and it's going to be pretty miserable anyway? Sounds very psychosomatic, doesn't it? Yeah.
She is a very stubborn lady. She's the sort of woman who, she's got the money to put the heating on, but she won't do it because she resents paying for it. But she does tend to get a bit more depressed in wintertime. I think it's just because of the early nights and things. She's a very keen gardener. She can't really do it too much these days because she's not as mobile as she used to be, but she can't do the gardening in the winter because it's too cold and it's too wet and she slips and things. So that things like that do have an effect with her. But again, she takes the tablet to treat the symptom, not the problem.
We're getting calls, Alex. I think you've stored something up in people, mate. So I'm going to start taking these calls. Thanks for weighing in on that, mate. Really interesting. And thanks for sharing your own personal experience. I could have went down that road, but I didn't because, I was lucky. But I could have ended up going to a GP and I might have ended up getting medication for what was a pretty normal reaction to difficult circumstances, you know.
Well, I went down that road and I'm glad that I came off it is all I can say. Because I'm doing much better these days without that sort of thing.
Tell you what, mate, brilliant to hear from you. Thanks, Alex.
Brilliant. Thanks
great
very
stuff.
Much.
Lovely to hear from Alex there on the line. Great to hear from him. Keep those calls coming in. 0161 408 2017. Don't be despondent if the calls don't get answered or if it doesn't get answered immediately. I will get to you between now and the end of the programme. 17 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Let's go to our next call. Caller, you're live. Welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Oh, hi there. It's Andy. I'm phoning from Exeter.
Andy in Exeter, welcome to the show, mate. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. And I want to say that show yesterday was absolutely brilliant with your second guest.
Oh, you enjoyed Stuart.
Oh, it's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I wanted to speak to you about virtual reality. It's not something I know a huge amount about. But I had a little play with my friend's virtual reality computer game system a few weeks ago.
Right, this is
and
good.
And I just wonder... it blew me away. And I just wonder if somehow that's going to play into the agenda sort of going forward. Because I can really see how people would... almost get trapped in kind of virtual reality. I mean, computer games are, you know, I find them sort of quite addictive and I don't really play a lot. But I don't know if you just had any thoughts on that.
I tell you what, Andy, a few weeks ago, or a couple of months ago, David was on the programme and I referred to the chapter in his most recent book, Transphantomism. And I asked David, what did he think of virtual reality? Because I was given a present of the VR gear headset that plugs into a phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was given a present of it because I talked about it on the program. Somebody said, well, you should experience it before you have any comment on it. And I put it on, and I think it's basic stuff in terms of, it's not cutting edge, the Samsung gear, but it's decent. And a couple of different apps on it, I was immersed in a world with dinosaurs and I was immersed in another world and I could see how addictive and how gripping it is. Now, David's take on this is, because we live in this holographic universe, which David believes passionately that we do, this virtual reality, Matrix-type universe that exists only because we choose to see it. We decode it, deprogram it. He reckons that when we start getting addicted to this technology, rather than being one, because right now we're one kind of room away from reality, from what is absolutely real. By using that sort of technology, David reckons we're actually putting another wall in, so you're almost two steps back from the real reality, effectively. And it makes it more difficult. And he reckons the reason they're rolling this stuff out and making it cheap and making it accessible to people is because they want people to immerse themselves in it and to get addicted to it and become suggestible then to, you know, technology that arrives within the next 5-10 years. I don't know what you think of that.
Yeah, well, I can definitely see, I think this is going to become incredibly addictive technology, especially for more of the kids kind of that are going to grow up with this. I can see it, I can probably see it being pushed as an educational tool, especially as the technology matures and gets, you know, the graphics get more and more sophisticated, you know, and who's not going to want to, you know, be able to tour the Colosseum or, you know, explore space, you know, in virtual reality. And it would be sold, you know, I think as this great kind of educational type thing in the schools.
And there's no doubt, Andy,
going forward.
Do you know what? There's no, in one of his recent books, I think it was The Perception Deception, David is brilliant at crediting his sources, and he named a number of people from academia in England. So respected professors of neural science, I suppose, the neural sciences, these professors of the brain and of the mind. And all of them seem to believe that using cell phones, even just using cell phones, looking at these screens, using tablets, let alone the virtual reality stuff in the games, are actually changing the physiological makeup of our brains. They're physically altering the brains, Andy. And that's not David saying that.
That's tough, isn't it?
It's unbelievable, isn't it? And between me and you, I went through a phase when I loved video gaming. I loved it.
Yeah.
You know, I had the PS2. I think the PS2 was the last thing I had, and I loved it, and I spent a lot of time at it. And then circumstances kind of happened that I couldn't play it. I didn't have any time for it. I didn't stop playing it. And I just don't do it anymore. It's not because I, you know, wised up to it. I didn't. I just didn't have the time, and I don't do it anymore. Knowing that or listening to stuff like that, does that make you think about your usage of it?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, just thinking about the virtual reality system I had a little play with, it's something called an Oculus Rift. And that's actually, the company's owned by Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, and it's this massive company. They bought it for, I think it was $2 billion or some ridiculous amount of money. And they're pushing it like crazy. And I just, you know, as soon as Facebook gets involved in anything, you have to wonder, you know. And there's this quite famous sort of photo, I guess, that's on the internet of Mark Zuckerberg walking through like this auditorium, and everyone is sort of seated, plugged into the Oculus Rift. It sort of pops up on quite a few websites, and he's got this kind of smug look on his face.
Yeah.
I just wonder, because I think technology in and of itself isn't either good or bad. It's just the way it can be used. I think, you know, things can be used very positively. I mean, computers can be used for really positive ends, and I think also for some quite negative.
I think you've hit on something brilliant there, Andy, because one of the ways they sell the technology is by demonstrating a benefit that you couldn't argue with. You know, they might say, well, here's a girl and she was born blind, but look, we've been able to implant something into her frontal lobe, and now she can see her mum for the first time. And of course, you can't argue with that. You know, you look at it, it's wonderful, right? But that's how they sell it, you know. And then it's other implantable type stuff that they're really looking to get into people. And these are just these are just selling points, Andy, you know. I think, again, like our previous caller, Alex, I think you've opened a can of worms here. Calls are coming in, mate. Andy, thanks for calling from Exeter. I really enjoyed listening to you. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, that's it. Just I've really enjoyed the show, and thank you very much.
You're a gentleman. Thanks for calling. Really enjoyed it.
Cheers, Richie. Bye-bye.
Bye for now. That was Andy in Exeter there. Wonderful stuff. Tristan is on the line. Tristan, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hey, Richie, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, and you're on Skype there, so the audio is lovely. Welcome, Tristan. How are you?
Pretty good. I wanted to touch on the antidepressants and that kind of what Alex was talking about.
Brilliant, mate. Go ahead.
I'm actually a really good person to talk to about that, because from 7, 8 years old and on, I've been on so many different antidepressants. Not right now, but as a kid, they put me on a lot. And my parents went through a divorce when I was 7 years old, and I took it obviously really bad as a little kid. And it was during the end of the 90s, and where, you know, that the antidepressants, they were really promoting that to kids as a solution. And I was kind of like a guinea pig. They put me on all kinds of stuff. Any antidepressant you can think of, they put me on it as a kid. And throughout my life, I've always struggled with depression. And I think I'm just, you know, sensitive people are, you know, can be very sensitive to depression and stuff. So I'm definitely a sensitive person. So I think that was, I'm just kind of wired to be a little bit more emotional. But
When you think back to when you were 7, 8 years of age, what kind of things were you going through that led people to think that you needed to, you needed to see somebody first, and then you needed to take a prescription? What was going on at that time?
I was just really depressed, really depressed. My parents' divorce was really ugly. It was a really nasty divorce, a lot of drama, and I was just kind of acting out. And being depressed.
That's the underlying cause, though, Tristan, isn't it? You're a young boy, you love your mom, you love your dad, and they're separating, and not only are they separating, but it's not amicable and it's difficult. You'd expect any child to be seriously affected by that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, my mom, I think she just thought it would be a good thing, and I spent a lot of years as a kid on different antidepressants. And I will say that I don't feel like antidepressants help. Some people, obviously, it does. And that's great. I always felt, my mom always used to ask me, well, how do you feel? And I would just say, I don't know. I can't really tell. I couldn't be an objective observer if I was better on them or worse. I really honestly couldn't tell. But I will say, in the short term, I would like anti-anxiety medication. If you're going through, like I went through a breakup, a long-term relationship, broke up last year, and I was beside myself. And I will say for about like a month, they gave me anti-anxiety medication, and that did help. But I think in short, stuff like that, you know, if you're going through a really tough time, you could do that. But as far as antidepressants, as being on it constantly, I don't know.
Do you mind me asking, how old are you now, Tristan?
I'm 27.
You're 27. Because looking back, you know, I'm thinking about the peer pressures, the pressures that are on children, you know, to be like the other kids, to have the experiences they have, to have the good things that other kids have. And you're going through all of that difficult time with your mum and dad, and there's an awful effect on you. And, you know, the best parents in the world can forget that, you know, their children are going through it, because they're so wrapped up in the emotion and the heat of it that they don't realise their kids are going through it. There's no doubt about that. I just don't know. I mean, even the breakup, I suppose I've been lucky enough. I've been with the same woman for 15 years now, and I didn't have many serious relationships before that. Again, I wonder if when you and this person separated, whether, you know, with good people around you, you know, friends to rally around and to support you, whether that might have been, I mean, I don't know, I don't want to be speculating here. Do you know what I'm getting at? As opposed to medication.
I totally get what you mean. Yeah, no, I totally get what you mean. I think for me personally, I was out of my mind with grief. So I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, all that kind of stuff. So I think in the very short term, it did help. Or if, you know, your parents die or something like that, that could be a possibility for you to actually barely function through your life while you're going through it. So I do think that there is some merit in that, me personally, at least.
Well, really, I'm glad to get that side of it, Tristan, because as I said, you know, I knew there would be people who'd gone through very difficult things and who were feeling terrible, who might say, look, it's easy for you, Richie, to talk about not medicating, and it's easy for you to talk about therapy and that. My own story, Tristan, is I suffered domestic abuse. It was a form of child abuse. I was very badly beaten for many, many years. Horrendous stuff, really. I mean, the sort of stuff you don't print, really. You wouldn't spray paint it on an underpass, which is a great American saying. Some of the things that happened to me, I eventually came to terms with it through finding a man. After going through several counsellors, I found a man who was very good, and he was very challenging in the way that we spoke about what had happened to me. And I avoided the medication. But I don't want to sound as if I'm coming across as superior, because I'm not. I was feeling just as bad as you were feeling. Maybe I wasn't, but maybe I was, you know? So,
I totally know what you mean. And to put merit to your point, I will say, there is, it's beneficial in short term, but in long term, I definitely, what helped me kind of find my way, because, I just kind of growing up and just kind of dealing with depression, you know, you get really lost. And what did help me more than anything else, more than any medications, was reaching out to philosophy, Eastern philosophy. David Icke really opened up my eyes a few years ago, and really made me kind of put things in perspective as far as kind of the nature of reality and who we are and all that stuff. And I will say stuff like that, where you're delving into your psyche without medication and you're kind of working through stuff. That is, as far as a long-term plan, I don't think you can get more beneficial than that.
Remind us where you're calling from, Tristan.
Florida.
You're in Florida, mate. Listen, thanks a million. I really mean that, for sharing that. That's vitally important information. I really appreciate it, mate. And, shows like this are all the better for experiences being shared like that. Really important stuff, Tristan. It really is. I've got a really interesting message coming in from Jen Crosby on this subject. Thanks for listening to the program, mate. Thanks for the kind words, and stay in touch with us, Tristan.
All right, thanks, Richie. Take care.
Brilliant stuff. Tristan in Florida there. Fair play to him for coming on the program to talk about that. It's 3 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, alternatecurrentradio.com, and TuneIn Radio. Now, Jen Crosby, a very good friend of the program's, on the old Pacific Coast there, in California. And Jen's mum, Shirley, is not having a great time of it lately. She's been in hospital. She's been unwell. Again, Shirley, if you happen to be listening today, all the love in the world. Let's hope you're back on your feet really, really soon. Now, Jen sends us this message via Facebook. Jen says, when they admitted mom into the hospital on the 17th of April, they started giving her all her usual daily meds, high blood pressure, insulin and such. The day after her surgery, which was on the 26th of April, because I was sleeping with her in the room from the night before and on, I was present in the early morning when they gave her her morning meds. I asked the nurse what the meds were, and one he named was Cymbala, C-Y-M-B-A-L-A, Cymbala. Right, which is an antidepressant. I said, Jen said, why are you giving her that? We spent an entire month over 3 years ago weaning her off that medication. He obviously was surprised to hear this, because they had been giving it to her for several days, not realising that she wasn't or hasn't had a refill on that prescription for over 3 years. Big fuck up, says Jen. I was so pissed. Then I asked to see the summary of her admission, and they printed it for me. It listed that one of the reasons on the list for her admission was depression. So then I demanded they remove that from her chart, had to talk to the hospital, etc., to have it removed. They assumed she was depressed and started her without her knowing or her consent on a medication she stopped taking over 3 years ago. Whenever you go to the hospital, writes Jen, you must make sure that everything in the admission and discharge record is accurate, they make so many mistakes. I just thought to share this since you were discussing pushing the depressants on people, says Jen, our friend Jen Crosby in California. Jen, thanks so much for that. And again, I'm sure that our listeners will have comment on that. So you can phone the programme inside the UK, 0161 408 2017. That's 0161 408 2017. If you're outside the UK, it's plus 44 408. No, it isn't. It's plus 44 161 408 2017. Plus 44 161 408 2017. Now, Niall is going to join us next. Niall is on Skype. Niall, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm very good.
And it isn't Niall. Is it Niall or is it Neil? It's Niall, right?
Do you know, it's funny you say that because that I've had that question haunt me for my
forever.
Entire life.
I thought you might. It's N-A-E-L. How do you pronounce it?
Actually, both Nael and Neil. It's spelled N-A-E-L because it's an Arabic name. But my parents are, my mother's Palestinian and my father's English. So in England, I was always called Neil.
All but, right, but
now I'm living
Nael.
In Dubai, it's Nael.
It's Nael, and you're in Dubai now. Right, so first question, before you say what you wanted to say, which can be about anything, what about Dublin City Council flying the Palestinian flag for the rest of the month? What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's brilliant. I think, you know, Irish people have always had an affinity towards the Palestinian sort of diaspora, and I identify with Irish people a lot. I'm actually a quarter Irish myself, so that's good.
What we say, the good quarter, of course.
The good quarter,
the good
yeah,
quarter,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good thing, isn't it? And I'm sure there'll be some blowback from Tel Aviv, but the motion was passed democratically by a massive majority, 42-11. The Dublin City Councillors are right. It's an apartheid state. It's a brutal occupation. It's illegal. The state of Israel itself is illegal. I'll be called anti-Semitic for saying that again. Every country in the world, I suppose, came to be through bloodshed and murder and mayhem.
Exactly.
Israel is no different. It shouldn't be there. You know, Israelis are welcome to stay there, but under the Palestinian flag, under the state of Palestine, where they have equal rights with the Palestinians, who get all the rights of return and all of that, and I'm going on my
soapbox.
One
man, one vote.
Exactly, and I should shut the hell up because it's your soapbox. So go ahead, mate. What else do you want to say?
Well, actually, what I wanted to talk about was something, the nature of spirituality and, you know, what does it mean to be a spiritual being in this day and age? And I think there are two elements to spirituality. And the first one is how you treat yourself, and then the other one is how you interact with the world around you. So the first point being how you treat yourself. In order to make any improvement or to understand the nature of the world around you, you have to first concentrate on your own personal well-being. So, for instance, if you're caught up in a lot of bad habits in your life, like drinking lots of alcohols to the point of abuse, you know, or taking lots of drugs, or having lots of affairs, or you know, kind of loose sexual relations, or you know, lots of different things like that, eating unhealthily, you know, not sleeping well. If you don't tackle those things, so that you're, because the, you know, the human body, mind and soul is an instrument, and you know, it plays its most beautiful music when it's tuned, and you have to tune your mind, body and soul so that you can actually understand the world around you. So that's the first thing. As far as understanding the world around you is concerned, there's obviously a lot of depth to reality that we have to come to terms with as a human race. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of the stuff that David and yourself and a lot of the guests that you bring on start going into are absolutely fascinating, and I love it. I listen to the show all the time. But I do think that each and every individual has to balance that search for truth with the search for their own inner well-being.
I can totally go along with that. I really can. It's something, funny enough, I've been thinking a lot about of late. I cut my, over a period of months, my alcohol intake down to lesser and lesser and lesser levels. And as of last Tuesday, so a week today, I've not had a drink. And I'm really happy about it. And I feel really good with it. You know, I'm brighter. I'm obviously happier. I'm a happy-go-lucky guy anyway. But I think I'm seeing things a bit clearer and feel a bit better. It's only a small thing, Niall. It's only a small thing that, you know, stopping that. But, yeah, I'm looking at the diet as well. And, yeah. No, I didn't come to that conclusion through your wisdom. I don't have that wisdom or that knowledge or understanding. But I just felt I had to begin. I had to start doing something. And cutting
if I could just touch on you know, as we're talking about this, from my own perspective, you know, obviously a few years ago, I was doing all of the things that I listed out that were wrong, you know, and still, because I felt young, I didn't think that I was doing any damage, even though I may have been damaging people around me, not to any like great extent, you know, I'm not an abuser, but you know, I did have a kind of a revolution, you know, where I started to basically just question it, everything that I was doing, and changing it. So whereas before I was, as I say, doing all these bad things, now, you know, I've cut down so many things that almost ostracized me from the world, or not the world, but ostracized me from society and society's habits. So, for instance, like I've banned, well, not banned, but you know, I'm reducing the use of plastic, you know, in my life because of the damage that it's doing to the environment. And it's so difficult to do because, you know, everywhere you go, all restaurants, bars, you know, the use of plastic as a currency. It's just, you get it without asking for it, a plastic straw or, you know, whatever. So you really need to fight very, very hard to make these changes in your life. Anyway, I think I've probably had more points, but I've forgotten them.
No, it's good. This is really good, yeah. Niall. Can I ask you this? Changing, how difficult was that?
Well, it was a process, I think, through hardship. So I went through a really bad divorce, and, you know, I had a child involved, and, you know, there a number of years that I really didn't know where to turn, because not even the closest people to me, like family, could help, you know, could really know the dilemmas that I was fighting with, and the truth, the horror that I was exposed to, both internally and externally. So I realized I've actually got to I've actually got to for my own sanity to find something. And I would say I was agnostic before that, and
right.
I came to a point where because I live in the Middle East, I'm surrounded by, you know, the mosques, and the aesthetic attraction towards the soundy of the Adhan drew me closer and closer towards Islam. So eventually I basically embraced Islam, and it was a very gentle process. You know, I came to a point where I learned to pray, and I was listening to people on the internet and, you know, spiritual gurus, if you like, but people like Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, who's a American convert who converted to Islam. Anyway, I don't want to go into too much detail about all that stuff. But
no, it's really interesting. But let me ask you one final question on that. Have you observed any difference in doctors based in countries where Islam is the predominant religion. Do you think Muslim doctors, let's just say, to be kind of
medical doctors.
Medical doctors, yes. Medical doctors who would come from the Islamic faith. Do you think they have a different approach to psychiatric illness or mental disorders than we do in the West? Have you observed any differences, do you think?
No, because I don't think that, medical practitioners, or should I say Islamic, that there's no real relationship. If you're a medical practitioner, you've got good doctors and you've got bad doctors. You go to one hospital, listen,
you're 100% right. Most of the doctors I've ever, met or, been treated by were from countries in the Middle East and had grown up with Islam as a religion. I wasn't suggesting that Islam would in any way influence the attitude of the doctor. Not at all. No, I was just wondering, culturally, would there be a tendency to be less likely to prescribe psychiatric medicine, which would be obviously a brilliant, it would be a good thing. I just don't know.
I think it would be an excellent thing, but if you're looking at a place like Dubai, it's so heavily sort of commercial it's probably worse here than in a lot of other places in terms of, doctors' readiness to prescribe a medication. I'm not really qualified to answer that question, I don't think.
Me neither. I tell you what, Niall, it was brilliant having you on, mate. By the way, Faisal tweets them, your point on plastics and the difficulty of avoiding them is an outstanding one. Sue tweets, what a very tuned in young man. He might sound young, Sue. He might sound young. Yeah. Hi to Mark Morrison as well. Loads of comment on this. It's an amazing phone in this. About the best one I think we've ever done, and it happened at the last minute. Niall, thank you so much, mate, for phoning the programme.
Thank you, Richie. And I must just say, I've had a couple of chats with you on email and I've enjoyed your show very much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to it, mate. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Niall. Lovely stuff. Yeah. Niall in Dubai there. Quarter Irish, we like that. His dad is Palestinian. I think he said his mum might be Palestinian. Great to hear from him. You can phone 0161 408 2017, 0161 408 2017, if you happen to be calling from outside the UK. It's +44161, that's +44161 408 2017. But you don't have to worry about calling me if you don't want to, because you can tweet. You don't have to tweet the programme. You can tweet the programme, but you can Skype it. And the Skype handle to the programme is Chat with Richie. And I better take a break because I'm way overdue a break. Very quick break. When we come back, more of your calls on this special last minute Richie Allen show. Really enjoying this. Amazing calls in that first hour.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premillionpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Welcome back to the program. I want you to take this program when it's on YouTube tomorrow. Place it alongside phone-ins conducted by people on radio stations like Radio 5 Live and LBC. And listen to the information that's coming from the callers to this program, as opposed to the nice men and women who call the national radio stations and are mocked and are rushed off the line after 30 seconds. It's an extraordinary thing. I know we should do more of these, but it's difficult. It's difficult because, I won't get into it. It's difficult because there's so many guests that we've got lined up and booked in and that we want to get on with various pieces of information to disseminate, to share with us. It's difficult to make time for these, but I know we should do more of these. Quarter past the hour, the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, and of course TuneIn Radio, and my own website, richieallen.co.uk. Yeah, richieallen.co.uk. Couple of calls lined up, or we will have a couple of calls lined up. So I'm going to go to our next call. In fact, I promised somebody I would call them back. So I'm going to do that now because I'm a man of my word. Somebody's been constantly ringing while I've been talking to Nael and others. And I said I'd call him or her back. So caller, you are live. Welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking to?
You are speaking to Anne Selly.
Anne Selly, hello. Welcome to the programme. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Richie.
Anne, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
First of all, can I just give a tip to everybody who's feeling depressed? A handful of cashew nuts is equal to a Prozac.
A handful of cashew nuts is equal to a Prozac tablet, Anne.
Yeah.
So there's an active ingredient in cashew nuts that's natural and it does the same thing as Prozac, effectively.
I guess so.
Excellent stuff. You've got to tell us where you came by that information.
On the internet warehouse.
Right. That throws up another question. Is it a source you can trust?
Yes. I've seen it in several places. You can Google it and stuff like that.
And have you tried it?
Yeah, it works.
Now, obviously the next question is, you've had periods then where you've been down in yourself and you've had problems. I don't want to be too personal. You don't have to answer any of those questions. But otherwise, you wouldn't have been looking at that sort of information.
That's right. But that's not really why I phoned up.
Right. Well, you have the floor then. Tell us why you phoned up.
I phoned up to see what you know about what's going on in Antarctica.
It's funny you mention Antarctica, Anne. A number of people have tweeted, not tweeted, but left messages on Facebook saying that there's something going on in Antarctica militarily, right?
Not only militarily, off-world type stuff.
Tell us what you know, Anne. Share with us what you know. Go ahead.
Well, I've only really been into this for a month. One of your followers, David Darsh, introduced me to UFOs, something which I'd never really thought about before. I wasn't very serious about it, didn't think it was anything really going on. Then I started listening to stuff and joining the dots. Biggest thing, I guess, that would shock everybody is anything you've ever seen in a sci-fi film, we already have and have had for years and years and years.
The technology, you mean?
Yeah, sometimes they actually use the technology because it's cheaper than faking it.
How interesting. Do you know, Anne, just to endorse what you said there, I think I might have mentioned this before, Will Smith made a film years ago with Gene Hackman called Enemy of the State. And they were given some, you know, sexy toys by the CIA to use in the film. And the technology was amazing to Will Smith and Gene Hackman. So this is incredible. Can you really do that? And one of the guys who was working for the CIA, who was outsourced to help with the production of the film, said, well, we're like 50 years beyond that now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Smith was absolutely gobsmacked. He said, you're what? And he said, yeah, we had that back in the Cold War days. Don't get too excited about it. And it was incredible, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that we're actually doing is really being covered up. Most of it because of the oil. Now, the people, the aliens that are in the Antarctic. I guess we really shouldn't call aliens because they were here a long, long time before us.
And are you talking about the claims that there's evidence beneath the ice?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Some crazy music started playing there. There's something underneath the ice, Anne, that proves ancient civilizations. There's some dome-type structure, right?
Yeah, there's huge, vast cities. You can actually fly around in these cities under the ice. And I've lost my train of thought for a second there.
Sorry about that. That's just bloody me. A massive crash of music came in there. Sorry about that. This is really fascinating stuff. Yes, somebody got in touch with the programme, said, can you do anything on this? And said, well, we will, if we can find somebody credible who has maybe visited the region and who knows something about it. But ancient civilizations, you're into this stuff, Anne, right? You know a lot more about this than I do.
But only for a month. This is only what I found out in a month. Now, these ancient aliens that live down there are the origin of the bloodlines in this world of ours, you know, the Rothschilds, etc. Now, and they're the evil ones, if you like, in inverted commas. Yeah. And they want to control the world through banks and oil. Now, we've had the technology for anti-gravity devices and space travel and God knows what for a long, long time, and these dark entities have kept it from us. Now, there's a chap called Dr. Greer who's just made a film about this.
Stephen Greer.
Yeah.
We've invited him on, Anne. He's a difficult guy to nail down. We've invited him on, yeah.
He's going to be premiering his latest film in the UK at some time in the next couple of months. I bet he'd come on then.
I'm sure he would, Anne. I've just had a message from my friend Jean Anne in Dublin. She's listening to you with great interest. She said, Richie, we know there's something going on down there. Anne is right. John Kerry was down there. So was the Orthodox Church head from Russia. So was Buzz Aldrin. I think what Anne is saying, she's onto something. One of those astronauts, one of the, she says, astronauts, yeah.
Yeah, and Bush has been down there, and Cheney's been down there, Abraham Lincoln's been down there, Clinton's been down there, and they're trying to stop us discovering that since the 50s, we've had technology that doesn't use oil.
Isn't it funny you just mentioned the oil? I've had an email from Derek. And he says, Richie, I'm loving this from Anne. Why do you think they haven't tried to get at all that oil that's there? They're not allowed, says Derek.
Well, they don't need the oil because they have the technology to run the world without oil, with alien technologies, as we would know them.
Hey, listen, you're 100% right, but I think the point Derek is making is some of these, you know, Exxon, BP type companies.
There's a huge exclusion zone around the Antarctic. I mean, you get the odd sort of visitor boat, but they're very much controlled.
And what do you think about this? Let me ask you this. So we've had people on this programme in the past. You've been listening to this since it began. You started with the programme.
Started with people's voice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's when I first got to know you. Do you think that there's some truth then to not extra, if we leave extraterrestrial entities aside for 1 minute, but entities that actually come from within the Earth then, from within what we see as the Earth, inside it.
They live within
the Earth. Within the Earth, yeah.
But they've come from other galaxies. And there's lots of different sorts. There's blue aliens, greys, there's very, very tall aliens. Anything that you've ever sort of heard about on the fringes, they're probably down there. But it's a massive, massive cover-up. But you can see the connection. If you don't connect, you see, you know, the Rothschilds in the oil being on the bad side. And that's why they're causing all these problems.
You're one of our listeners who would prefer that we discuss these subjects a bit more than what we do. In fact, I was speaking to David about this. Problem is, Anne, is find, because I prefer to be talking about these subjects. I prefer to have the programme. Hard news analysis and then talking about this information. But getting people with credibility, Anne, getting people who ordinary people will actually listen to and won't think, oh, well, he's just talking through his backside, he's making it up as he goes along. That's the problem. But I'm thinking on the Antarctica, what you're presenting, what I have been told in recent weeks. I think absolutely bang on. There's something there that needs to be, you know, to be looked at very, very closely. But just finding people, you know.
The more people talk about it, the more we'll find out. And the only way to get people talking about it is on shows like yours. And people will get to hear because people are drawn into this.
Yeah.
And we're all connected. I mean, I've been listening to you for, God knows, 100 years, it feels like, sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially if you go through recent weeks like you have with all the bloody election stuff that drove me around the bend. But, you know, you've got a dot connect backwards, and a lot of this is from this ancient civilization which has been here for millennia.
For millennia. And the evidence on the Earth, Anne, I mean, the physical evidence on the Earth alone. I mean, we've had Sam Osmanovich, I've probably pronounced his name wrong on the programme, Eric and others, presenting these images from all over the world that are not just maps, but are evidentiary, they're just absolute evidentiary proof that beings of far greater intelligence than we understand have been here and maybe still are here, but just unknown to us.
Yeah. I mean, there's huge archaeological dig in Turkey called Göbekli Tepe, and that's 18,000 years old, and they only just dug that up. That was actually buried by the people that made it, and it's like Stonehenge-like in size.
Laser precision, Anne. Laser precision. When you see some of these structures and you think, how did ancient man and woman, how did they have the precision to cut these massive structures, laser precision. It's staggering stuff, really. There's no denying it.
When you look at the joints in Machu Picchu, my father was a stonemason. When they start quarrying, they start by getting out small stones, and the bottom of the hill is small stones, but the top of the hill is big stones. How the hell did they get them up there?
Yeah.
With ancient technology.
Anne, we're getting a lot of interest in this. Thanks for phoning the press. I think it's the first time we've ever spoke, as long as you've been listening to this programme and blogging about it.
I just feel that this isn't getting out there quickly enough. You know, there's a lot going. There's a lot of stuff about... Just do a Antarctic search on YouTube.
Tell you what we'll do. Look, we'll make an absolute pledge. We'll get some discussion on the programme next week about this... about this area and this issue. You know, one of the things we do, Anne, and it's frustrating to people who are far beyond the nonsense that is politics. It is frustrating for people like you. I totally get that. And I can take the slings and arrows. I don't get offended when people criticise it, because I understand that. I spoke to David at length about this yesterday. I asked his advice. David doesn't have anything to do with the programme or the editorial of it whatsoever. But I'll say to him, look, you know, listeners get a bit antsy. But, you know, it's entry-level stuff, Anne. You know, showing people the nonsense of the politics is getting people on that ladder to getting them to considering information that you will look at now and you'll read and you'll understand. But I can understand people who are further down the road, I can understand why they get a bit cheesed off when we get a bit political and a bit newsy. But what are you going to do, you know?
Yeah. There's a chap that you should get in touch with who has a radio show in America called Jimmy Church. Now, I'm sure he will help find people to come on your show. He covers this extensively.
This is his bag, is it, Jimmy Church? I'll make a note of that right now, Anne. Listen, I'm going to move on. Thanks for calling in. Brilliant to hear from you, by the way.
Real pleasure, thank you.
Look after yourself. There's Anne Selly, lovely lady based in Cheltenham, who's been listening to this programme since day one. Was never on the programme. Anne, strangely enough, came across Anne back in 2013, I think, when TPV begun in London. How do you find people to talk about this issue credibly? A number of you are tweeting me and sending me messages saying, oh, get this person on, get that person on. And believe you me, I promise I will look into them and will look into those people. So we've managed to go the entire programme. We've taken a dozen calls, I think, at this stage or more. And Alex came on at the beginning. We heard from Alex before, but we've not heard previously from our callers today. It's a wonderful thing. We have a huge audience, and it is a global audience. So it's marvellous to hear from so many new callers. I love that, and I'm glad that pretty much all the callers tonight were brand new. Faisal wants in on this. We'll give Faisal a shout in a minute. Before we do that, though, another very brief break. The final break of the show, back in a minute after these. Don't go anywhere.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2. Available now at premillionpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Right, welcome back. Mark says, Richie, stop. You're not entry level, mate. You have something for everyone. And you do balance politics with the X-Files, says Mark. The X-Files. Thanks, mate. David says, lovely call from Anne. Gracious responses, Richie, says David. No, terrific stuff from Anne. Jane says, Richie, what about getting Richard Hall on? He's covered many aspects of UFOs. Jane, if you've not got anything good to say about anybody, you shouldn't say anything at all. So I'm not going to say anything about Richard Hall. I think he presents programs. I don't know where, but I understand he does present programs. I think some of them might go out on a Sky channel. If anybody wants to find out what Richard Hall is saying about anything, do follow him on his platforms. But he won't be on this program, and I'm going to say no more about that. Keep the tweets coming in. Don't take that personally, Jane, by the way. Thanks for listening to the program. Keep the tweets coming in at Richie Allen Show. Richie at richieallen.co.uk is the email address. A lot of tweets came in during those conversations, but I didn't get to them because I was wrapped up in the conversations. But to find out what other people are saying to me, go to twitter.com where it says search Twitter. Put Richie Allen Show in there, all one word, no gaps, no spaces. Press enter and you will see what other people are saying to me. Faisal, welcome back. How are you?
Hello, Richie. How's it going?
Very well, mate. Very good. Surprising program. Delighted with the way it's gone. Strange old day with guests dropping
indeed,
out.
It's been great, actually.
But you throw it out to the listeners and you get amazing calls on depression, on medication, on everything. It's been brilliant, mate. Now, the floor is yours, so you know what to do.
Okay. Well, it's actually Anne made me think of something, reminded me of something that I hadn't thought about for a long time because there have been a lot of moon landing theories around. And long before that, it kind of occurred to me that definitely there was something dodgy about the moon landings. There's definitely something dodgy about the pictures at the time. And I was a kid, teenager at the time, reading The Unexplained. And it occurred to me that, well, okay, maybe they went up there once, but they definitely haven't shown any pictures that somehow justify going up several times. And yet they've launched this huge rocket, the Saturn V, which if it hasn't gone to the moon, then you've got tons and tons of payload, which was actually shot up into space. And that's something I haven't really heard referred to since, I think it was around 2000 when that Fox documentary about the moon landings being faked came out. And I completely forgot my old theories and kind of thought, oh yeah, they must have been faked.
Yeah.
But there's still the thing of what have they actually put up there? If they haven't gone to the moon, they've chucked huge payloads in terms of the rockets that are supposed to have gone to the moon and back. That's a massive amount of stuff. And yeah, you could have huge space stations. You could have vehicles that were meant to go to other planets and maybe communicate with aliens and things. I don't really investigate the alien stuff for a long time, but I've never actually thought it was a case of the alien side is crazy and the non-alien stuff is true. It's always been, it's sort of two scientific roads, and really people need to explore both of them, because there's no way of knowing whether there's aliens or not. And so it's good somebody's doing that, but it's also good to explore, well, what if there isn't? What other explanations are there for what's going on? Because in the end, that may actually then show you the outline of what can't be explained of where the alien stuff is, as it were. So that was just something from that I thought from...
Well, you were listening to Anne, yeah. What about, I mean, David obviously talks a lot about the moon as a vehicle and the relationship between the moon and Saturn and how those two satellites basically project the hologram, which is just absolutely mind-blowing stuff when you start to think about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's more or less why I haven't gone into it, because there's so many different conflicting theories and there's such an area of mystery where I wouldn't even be able to take a rough guess that I've kind of retreated from that. But I in no way think there's anything wrong with actually looking into it. I'm one of the reasons I'm a fan of David Icke, because I'm sure he's sincere, at least.
Well, nobody has ever. Isn't it funny you say that? Because I think where he stands alone is nobody has ever mixed the two. I mean, David talks about, you know, about politics, about finance, economics, you know, medicine, all of this. And then so much of his work is tied up in the nature of reality. I think that's what, of course, sets him apart from everybody else. That's not to say that he's more important or better. I'm not saying that, but there's never been anybody connect the dots, you know, to the world that we see as normal, the world of work, the world of jobs, the world of politics, to this other world, this hidden world. And I spent years, Faisal, you know, absolutely refusing to talk about it because I was worried about the stigma. You know, as a broadcaster, well, you're just an idiot. And some years ago, I stopped.
That's where there definitely shouldn't be a stigma. It's like with scientists, you have maybe one group of scientists investigating the infinite universe theory, and then another bunch of scientists investigating the Big Bang theory, the finite universe theory. It doesn't mean one's nuts and the other one's sane, or you know that they're all respect each other as scientists. It's just one is exploring one theory where the others are exploring another theory.
Yeah, it's funny though, because anybody who talks about a hollow moon or the moon as a vehicle, whenever that ever gets mentioned on any regular TV show or news program, they're absolutely mocked and roundly vilified. I mean, you see David's experiences in Australia on Australian national breakfast television, sitting there laughing and giggling about the moon being, you know, a movable object. And, condescending and mocking.
That's the only thing I find unreasonable is laughing at this stuff. I mean, nobody explains why the moon, from our side, from our vantage point, is exactly the same size as the sun.
Yeah.
So that there will be an eclipse, and the eclipse will show things which are only possible because it's almost exactly the same size, and so you see the corona. I mean, what a mind-boggling coincidence that is. And to just say, oh, that definitely happened naturally.
You took the words out of my mouth. That is a mathematical coincidence that, not to be making puns, is astronomical. What a coincidence that is, you know. And I think our guest...
And also the fact that it doesn't rotate, or it rotates at the same rate as it turns around the Earth. So it's always showing the same face. That's also a massive coincidence.
You're dangerously close now to bringing in the flat Earth theory.
I'm joking, by the way.
People can say what they want on this program.
Sorry?
I said I'm joking. People can say whatever they want on this program. They certainly will not be ridiculed by me at all. That's an issue I've not covered. Yeah, yeah. And I don't really want to cover it, to be honest. But no, I thought you know, you might go down that road. But
oh, no, I'm definitely not a flat earther. It's just with those two coincidences, it's absolutely not crazy to look into the idea that the moon is there for some intelligent reason rather than just there naturally. I'm not saying it is,
yeah,
but it's definitely not crazy looking into it.
Faisal, I've got a call waiting. I'm going to take it before you run out of time. Thanks, mate, for that insight. It's really, really interesting. Yeah, Anne, I think, has triggered a lot of comment on this, and we are going to endeavour to do something on Antarctica next week. Faisal, as usual, mate, thank you. Talk again
soon. Thanks for having me on the show.
An honour. Right, a couple of you, Alan and others, asking about Richard D. Hall. Listen, I don't have to explain myself to anybody. I'm completely autonomous here. I'm not interested in Richard D. Hall, and I don't have to explain why. And if anybody wants to see what Richard Hall is saying about anything, they know where to go. They don't need to hear me speak to him. I don't want him on this programme, and I won't be explaining that, because that's gutter press to be saying things about people that are not really relevant. Nobody cares what I think about Richard D. Hall. But he's got a platform. He's doing okay as far as I know. I don't know too much about him. So if you want to hear what he's got to say on these issues, find him on one of the Sky channels, I believe, or on his own website. It's exactly 19 minutes to the top of the hour. We do have a call, as I said, coming in there when I was speaking with Faisal. Caller, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm very well, Richie. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. Who am I speaking with and where are you calling from?
You're speaking to Stephen from Belfast. I've been on the phone to you before, Richie, when Donald Trump became the president.
You were, Stephen. You were. Welcome back, mate. Nice to have you back.
Thank you so much, and I hope you're better from the weekend, yes?
I had a dose of the trots on Saturday. Yes, I did. But I got over it very quickly. I hope nobody's eating.
Well,
but I'm okay now. Thanks, mate.
Three things very quickly in succession, right? First of all, I'm trying to do something behind the scenes to help raise finances for your show, right?
Thank you very much.
And I've been in touch with several people to get a show over here in Belfast. It's not a carbon copy of David Icke, because nobody can copy David Icke. He is his own inimitable style. That's that out of the way. So we're going to be doing that and getting the money over to you. That's in due course. Around about October is this show, right? But I would like to speak about Donald Trump and the extension of your guest last night, Stuart, about numerology and where I believe Trump is going with this, you know, after he became the president.
Yeah, the floor is all yours, mate. Go right ahead, Stephen.
Okay, back in November, as you know, everybody was confused who's going to win the election. And I was studying this stuff well before he became the president. And I've been studying this stuff since 1993. And it's happening right now this year in regards to the papacy, in regards to the Trump administration, in regards to what's happening in Russia, the escalations in North Korea. They have been planning to do this for decades. I'm sure you know this. You talk about the centralization of power, you know, how the economic regions are being broken up into 10 regions around the earth in conjunction with the United Nations. Now, this month, Donald Trump meets with the Pope on the 24th of May. And your guest last night, Stuart, was talking about emergence of a one world religion. Now, I believe that's directly inextricably linked into what Israel is doing. And that's why I believe Donald Trump has been chosen for this hour in history. And he is a very, very dangerous man, as you know.
Yeah.
He's already flip-flopped on what he said he was going to do before he became the president. We've already seen the false flag attacks in Syria and the attack in Syria with the United States attacking Syria. And as you rightly said last week about the fly zones, you know, Russia are onto this. But I don't know if your listeners know about this. The last time I was on the show, I talked about this thing called the Temple of Solomon. And this is in direct correlation with your your guest, Stuart, last night about the occultic, numerological, Luciferian connection with this temple, what this temple is going to be. And this is the year, Richie, this is going to start really coming to the surface. They've been planning to build this temple for decades. And this present pope is the first pope in history who has been shown the blueprints back in 2014 for the building of this temple.
Stephen, do us a favour now. Do us a favour. Let's not assume knowledge. A lot of our listeners now won't know anything about this. Give us a bit more of a background to this Temple of Solomon. Tell us what it's about.
Okay. They, the Masons, this is all inextricably linked to 911 without going down that rabbit hole. But it is, this is directly connected to 911. The 1X, the X1 in numerological code is 911. So every Masonic temple has 1X, X1, which is 911. I don't know if you know that or not.
I'd heard that,
Okay, so this, they're planning to bring this manufactured world peace. It's not going to be a real world peace. It's a manufactured world peace. And as you know, Donald Trump, he is he's protecting Rudolph Giuliani, who is a prime suspect on September 11th. He's protecting Benjamin Netanyahu, who's a prime suspect on September 11th. Well, I'm sure your guest Christopher Bolland spoke about this.
Not to mention the 7th of July and the advanced knowledge he had. He was in London. Of course.
And he happened to be in London. We know all that. That's all in the public domain.
Absolutely.
I believe that they are ratcheting up this fear factor about North Korea. The Pope went forward last week and said, we need to unify all the leaders of the world and all the religions of the world to combat this escalating tension in North Korea, this nuclear crisis or potential nuclear crisis. You know yourself, Reggie, North Korea has been on the target list for some time.
Yeah, it was on the list.
I believe they're going to either ratchet up the fear to bring humanity to the point where they're going to be begging for the solution, not to go into DEFCON 1, or they can sacrifice North Korea on the altar of sacrifice, ultimately to terrify humanity into the solution, which is the New World Order. This biometric 666 New World Order, where we're going to be interfaced into this high computer.
Stephen, I've got to ask you this. I've got to ask you this, because this is really brilliant stuff, this. It really is. Do you believe, like Stuart would believe, and David and others, that when somebody like Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or Emmanuel Macron or any of these people, when you look at their milestones, so a certain date that was significant in their success or in their development, are those dates actually clues and keys to what's to come? To what's to come down the line? You know, we had the recent terrorist attacks on the 23rd of March, 2 years in a row, 322. Do you think these dates, like when Macron turned, like the day he announced his candidacy for the presidency of France, would the numerology of that day be a clue to what might happen in the next two? Would it be? Right.
Absolutely. These are secret codes to their initiates. It's letting their initiates know that the agenda is going ahead on schedule according to the plan. And this long-term objective is ultimately to centralize a world government, 10 economic regions. There's 10 floating chairs in the United Nations. There's going to be 10 economic regions, and they're going to manufacture a global stock market crash in order to bring this in, this biometric super surveillance system where all of us will be tracked.
You're going to love my guest tomorrow night, by the way, Stephen, if you happen to be able to listen to it. I've got a chap coming on tomorrow for the first time called Richard Kahlberg. Richard runs a website called thenarrowgateweb.com. Fascinating guy. I've been had a really good look at him and liked what I saw a lot. I've invited him on. And this is pretty much what he's going to be chatting with me about tomorrow night.
Well, very quickly, I don't want to eat into your time.
No, it's great to hear from you. Go ahead.
this year, 2017, is the year where this all starts amalgamating into the plan. As you know, it's the 120th anniversary where Theodor Herzl, with the Jewish Congress, met for the establishment of Israel. Then you have the Balfour Declaration, as you know, Prince Charles and all the other elites are meeting this year. You've got the 1967 50th year anniversary. You've got the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. You can see, and now the papacy is bringing back the Protestant so-called denominations into the fold, back into the fold. This has all been carefully orchestrated. It's been planned for decades. And this is the year they use numerological codes. They use astronomical alignments, the same way they did on September 11th. There's a great speaker, Richie, called Mark Passio, that goes into the whole numerological code, the satanic Luciferian code of September 11th. And he goes on for maybe 2 hours in a documentary about this. It's absolutely fascinating. It's mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling stuff, isn't it? And it's there. It's there for people to see. And when it's explained, and when you get people who are able to explain it and understand it, it's pretty apparent very quickly. And it doesn't, you know, you don't get bogged down with it. It's pretty easy to see it, really, once you're given the tools.
Absolutely. They hide it inside with the blind counsel. And programs like your program that helps enlighten people, and people like David who are connecting the dots with this agenda. And I don't want to lose my train of thought, but I personally believe that Donald Trump was selected to cover up September 11th.
I
really genuinely believe that.
Yeah, we're just about out of time. I'm not going to take any more calls. Okay. I've got to just get out. Listen, thanks for that. I'll be bringing this up tomorrow with Richard Kahlberg on the program. He's on an hour too tomorrow. We've got an hour with him on this particular subject. Thanks for the kind words about the show and about helping the show financially.
Yes,
I really mean that.
It's brilliant. Long may it continue. You're a fantastic host. Fantastic.
We're very lucky.
You really are.
We're very lucky with the people who come on.
Great show tonight with all the different subject matters. Absolutely tremendous.
Thanks a million, Stephen. Look after yourself.
Take care.
Bye for now. That was Stephen in Belfast there. Wonderful stuff that. 8.5 minutes to the top of the hour. It's about all we can do phone-wise. Came on tonight. We were due to talk about Pedogate today, and I was due to speak with Ralph Epperson. But that went belly up. Very late on in the afternoon, I could have gotten, I don't want to say substandard, because there's no such thing as a substandard guest, but I could have rushed into something, decided to throw the phone open, and what an outstanding programme it's been. I wouldn't say that otherwise. If it was me speaking with a guest, I'd never say that, because that wouldn't be appropriate at all, but an amazing programme, both hours. If you came in on the end of it, you got to listen to the first hour. Absolutely outstanding stuff from our callers tonight on a variety of different issues. You know, at short notice as well, I can't say enough about the callers today. Just to mention, again, got a bit of a special show lined up for you tomorrow and Thursday. I'll tell you about it now, he says, as he gets his diary. First up tomorrow is Jürgen Schmidhuber in Bonn. Jürgen Schmidhuber is the man responsible for Ask Alexa and Ask Google. He's an artificial intelligence genius. He's a scientist and a professor in Bonn. He reckons robots and artificial intelligence are going to take over in the latter part of this century. But they're going to be so intelligent and so preoccupied with colonizing other worlds and building factories and other robots that they're going to leave us well enough alone. Now, I don't agree with that. So I invited Jürgen on, and he seems like a smashing guy, spiffing, as they say here in the UK. So Jürgen is going to come on. I'll debate him tomorrow, and I'll put all the questions that you would expect me to put to him. And then Richard Kahlberg from the narrowgateweb.com. Richard is on the programme tomorrow as well. And then on, speaking of Pedogate, I'm going to be speaking to a journalist called Liz Crokin. Liz is a remarkable woman. Gotten to know Liz in the last few days. Liz was fired from her job at a serious online magazine, a very, very well-known one, because she was writing articles about child trafficking in the United States. Liz joins the program, by the way, on Thursday. So pretty busy old week this week. Can't, you know, it's been a good week, I think, thus far. Really looking forward to those guests tomorrow and Thursday. And I'm flapping now because there is something else I want to tell you, and it's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't just think what it is. Right. Yeah, it's gone now. You see, I'll just have to put it on. I'll just have to put it on Facebook. Right. Big thank you to Simon Stewart for all the work Simon does on YouTube. Major thanks to Simon for that. The monologue, because I spoke a lot about mental health in the first half an hour, and then the phone in. If Simon wants to do that, Simon, if Simon is up for it, he'll put those two segments on YouTube. The programme will, of course, be on podcast very, very shortly, in about 15, 20 minutes' time. I've loved the programme. I just can't say that enough. What a wonderful show we had today, out of nowhere. Wonderful calls from the beginning with Alex right up to Stephen at the end, and Sally in the middle and everything else. We will do more of these as we go along, but it's difficult to do them because we've got a backlog of guests that we've asked to come on the programme and promised spots and segments on the programme as well. But the phone-ins are brilliant and they're vital, and I do hear you when you say, Richie, you need to do more of those. So that's it for Tuesday's programme. It's still bright outside. I might just step outside the back door and walk barefoot in the garden and breathe deep of the evening air. It's beautiful out there. Until tomorrow, remember, top show for you tomorrow. Until tomorrow, look after yourselves and one another. This programme, as usual, produced, edited and introduced by myself, Richie Allen. Until 7 p.m. Wednesday. Bye for now. Leaving you with the Fray, How to Save a Life, on your Richie Allen Show. Bye for now. See you tomorrow.
Step one, you say we need to talk. He walks. You say sit down, it's just talk. He smiles politely back at you. You stare politely right on through. Some sort of